It's time for Weekly Manga Recap. It's Y-Rot, it's Rolo T, it's nobody else this week talking to you about manga. So Chris, I don't know, you excited for this week?
Yeah. Well, Nick, what's your favorite thing about doing this podcast with just two people and only two people?
To be alone.
Just with us, individually.
I like how we get into an echo chamber, and so when we, you know, talk trash about Black Clover, there's no one there to disagree with us.
Yeah. It's like my least favorite chapter of the week every week, right? Like, oh, Black Clover. Like, yeesh, could Yami's nose be any bigger? Come on now. High five, guys, for truth.
Can you imagine if we had Alisa on the show back in the early days of World Trigger, how much she would have hated us?
She's like, oh, I still hate you.
I still remember, guys.
I'm trying to think what she'd say if she were here when we were talking
right
about
now,
World Trigger back then.
Say? I don't know. And can you give me your best, most convincing Annalisa impression?
Okay. That's what you're supposed to talk, Annalisa.
It's seething anger. She's really angry.
Oh, she's just seething. Okay.
I guess I get you.
A little bit of foaming at the mouth too.
Oh, okay. Alright, I grab some Barbasol and just spray it into my mouth and go, ooh, better idea! Nick.
I think you've won the coupon, though, for enough guest appearances on the show, which means that we now have bitter indifference as your intro, as opposed to, welcome everybody!
The first six times it's special. After your seventh appearance, it's like, hey guys, Annalisa's here.
Sorry for the disappointment.
We're especially grateful, at least actually, to have you, because otherwise it would probably be a weirdly short episode of Weekly Manga Recap. We have no recommendation to talk about. We have two fewer series.
Which happen to be two of the ones we talk the most about, generally.
To have the most positive things to say, so we would just be here like, Bleach sucked, and then move on, and then we'd be done in 5 minutes. So, we're glad to have you here, have your occasionally dissenting opinion with us.
Almost always dissenting opinion about a certain series.
Not this week, though.
I have something I want to bring up, though, before we get into our recap, Nick.
Okay.
Just a small anecdote. Now, Nick, you're in a committed relationship.
Yes, I am.
So I feel it's very... the onus is on me, then, to bring the bachelor perspective to Weekly Manga Recap, to represent...
Your personal sacrifice.
Yeah,
necessary.
Our single viewers, essentially.
You will sacrifice the loving embrace of a special someone for...
I forego having a family and someone who cares about me solely for the sake of representing the single members of our audience.
Oh, man, what a saint you are,
man. It's the tragic sacrifice that I make for the sake of our community. So I decided to try out Tinder. Which, if you don't know what Tinder is, it's a dating app. You essentially post up your profile, then you get matched with the people you're interested in, and you see their photo, and then you get the choice of swiping left to say you don't like them, or swiping right to say that you like them.
Wait, before you go on, I got a question about Tinder.
Okay.
Is that all you see, is a picture of them, or do you get, like, a description?
You get a couple photos, and then you get a small description of them. Like, you could put a little bit of information. Not, like, a full dating website profile, but you can put, like, a blurb about yourself, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah. So, if you swipe right on somebody, it means you like them. And if both of you swipe right on each other, it means, like, you get a match. And then you can start talking to each other, and you can hook up or date or whatever you want to do. So I signed up for it, and I put what I thought was like a humorous kind of description for myself in the bio. I put like, despite appearances, I am not a paid model for Tinder to fill their app with more hunks. I thought like, it's enough to get like a good laugh. That'll give someone pause as they're scrolling through a bunch of dudes. So I signed up for it. I'm going through girls. I'm not absurdly picky or anything like that. I'm swiping right on basically everybody. The only thing you could do to make me swipe left on you was basically if you had like a picture of yourself like mainstream heroin in your profile photo, or if you were black. Those were like the two things that would get me to swipe left. I'm kidding on that. But I want to know, like, I wasn't being particularly, like, super, like, if you're not a 9 or above, no time for you. Nothing like that. So I'm swiping right on it. Don't get any hits or anything like that, but I'm like, hey, it's my first day on this. What are you going to do? Like, everyone has to get to me next, you know? Like, I have to get filtered into their queue. So the next day, my sister's over. I tell her I'm on Tinder. She takes my phone. She starts, like, going through, correcting, like, things on my profile. And she starts going through my matches then and being like, oh, I like her, I like her, I don't like her, I like her. And my phone dings. And it's like, we got a match. And she keeps the phone and she's like, I want to help you out with this. I'm going to send this girl a message the way I would like to get a message on this kind of service.
Hmm.
So she sends her a message. It's a little bit of a strange one. I mean, in my mind, she's like, hey, how's your weekend going? I nearly melted into the pavement during my run this morning. Hope it gets cooler out. And I was like, I don't know if that works, but I'm really bad at opening lines and icebreakers, so maybe this is better. I don't know. My brother then takes my phone, and he just swipes right on fucking every single person for like a minute straight. He knowingly does it. Doesn't even look at the photos. Just right. It had to have been throughout the course of those like 2 days, I would say around 200 people got swiped right on. Now remember, the only thing you need to get a match is that you both just need to swipe right. So my brother put a lot of shots out in the dark on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's been about 5 days since then. I've received a grand total of one match. That being the same person my sister got, who, I will note, has not responded to me since my sister sent that initial message.
Oh, don't worry about that.
It's tragic in that way, but here's what's infuriating. There are bots on Tinder that just want that just want to steal your credit card information, or predators who will pretend to be women so that they can send you like invitations to like secret homosexual trysts that they were like trying to like cover up or things like that. None of those people fucking swiped right on me. Apparently, I'm like, wait, even robots, even people looking to deceive or con me. Are even swiping right on me?
Maybe they know you can't be conned. Look at it that way.
You're too smart, Chris.
Yeah, they're like, look at this witty profile description, this shot of him pretending
to
be...
No way he'll give us his credit card.
Pretending to be coy, yeah. No, they don't have that attitude on every other app I've used that allows you to communicate with people. Just the dating website bots are like, no, this guy's too smart for us, let's move on. Let's just hit his email 6 times from various, like, computer manufacturers. It's heartbreaking.
I did a thing with either Tinder or basically an identical app on The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking into racism on dating apps. And so it was like Jessica Williams and Ronnie Cheng, who is a newer guy. He's very obviously of Chinese descent. And so they're like, well, Jessica Williams is a little bit too famous now for her to actually just set up a profile and not have people respond to it. So we'll get this guy who is still relatively anonymous and is Asian to set up, and he did basically like what your brother did for days straight. They just like swipe. 0 matches in the course of like weeks because not as popular because he's just Chinese.
Do you think then, by that same theory, perhaps as an adverse reaction to doing Weekly Manga Recap for 5 years, that sort of Asian influence has found its way into my aura.
Manga.
And that's why they're not swiping right. Like maybe they're like, I see a lot of One Piece in that aura, and I'm not sure I dig it.
That's why I'm lucky because my girlfriend and I would not have met if I didn't read manga, so
that's the same for me. Well, for anime.
I was gonna say you're also dating Nick's girlfriend because of anime? Nick's like, this is so
No, not at all.
And she told me she would be into a threesome.
You know how long I've been parking up that tree and really getting a lot of negative feedback for it?
Oh boy. I'm sorry about that though, Chris. That's not exactly something that you can look at and be like, yeah, good for my ego.
It's not really like
a way to spin that positively.
It's not deflating. It's just like me being like, well, this is good. This saved me like a Match.com subscription for 3 months because it's the exact same response I get on Match.com. Like 7 like emails out. Like, how are you doing? Nothing back. Like, all right, I'll just be over here.
I like that your siblings are helping you out.
Oh, they weren't. Well, my sister was. My brother was just swiping right on everything so he could, like, I'd presumably get matched up with a bunch of, like, disgusting pigs or monsters or, like, horrible people who were just like, DTF! Actually, I think his goal was, he said, if you swipe right on enough people, eventually dudes just start getting added to your pool because they don't have women to go with anymore. I think that was his goal, to see me get matched up with a bunch of guys, because I think he would have found that hilarious. What are you going to do?
Okay. So, anyway, let's talk about manga now.
Yeah, I was hoping that would kill about another 30 minutes so we could get to our usual two-hour mark, but...
It's the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, and we're going to go alphabetically as per the normal, and we are going to start off with Black Clover.
Black Clover! Nick
didn't totally hate this week, spoilers ahead. It's, page 65. I think that's bugging me more than it's bugging you now, Chris, honestly.
No, it bugged the crap out of me this week again, too, because I went to page 52 in the mag, or 65 in the magazine, and I was like, My Hero Academia, what happened?
Page 65, the guy who doesn't know when to quit.
Another cheesecake cover page, which is always what Black Clover's doing.
Her arm looks like a side boob, because of its positioning.
And of course, behind her, we then see Annalise's aquatic sword boy alter ego.
Yeah, there we go. I got my dance magic on.
Yeah, with your dance magic and your side braids. Your Anakin Walker Scott side braids.
Watch out. Later I'll kill everybody.
Aww.
Sorry, that, spoilers.
That was a pretty sweet fight.
He looks cool in that picture, though. I like it.
I like his outfit a lot.
I like the way his braids are flowing through the air as he spins. Anyway, last time, Luck and Magda dug deep down and remembered their history with Asta, and it pressed them to fight on until they got beaten down by Beast Magic.
Wait, should we mention here, because there's even an ad for it in the magazine, that Black Clover Volume 1 is now available.
Yay. Please go support it. Wait. Before we go on, thinking of Black Clover Volume 1, actually, Viz put out an animated trailer for it.
Oh.
It's pretty cool. I'll put it in the chat right now.
By the way, Beast Magic Guy's name is Veto. I don't remember if that was ever said at any point.
It must have. Then they announced... He called...
When they were introduced... In the last big arc.
Okay.
Yeah, when they all showed up, I remember Leashed going through them one
right,
by
right,
one.
Right, he gave them all a big on, he specialized in this, and she specialized in that, and so, right, I remember that.
Yeah.
But, it's just weird because, like, someone say this guy's name, Beast Magic Guy! You can't mistake him for anyone else, at least.
I was kind of hoping they wouldn't say his shit name this chapter, so if I gave him my MVP, I could just say, my MVP was Beast Magic Guy.
So, Yami is looking on in concern now that Luck and Magda have been officially defeated by Veto, but he does kind of give them a little bit of silent congratulations, like, yo, you were real men, the way you lost. I get what he's trying to say, but he's like, you better do the same, kid, and down at Asta, So, Veto was hit by Asta in the last chapter when he rushed in to assist, but just like before, when Luck and Magda combined their powers, he doesn't seem to have taken much of an injury at all. There's barely a mark on him. He says that, oh yeah, yeah, that stung a bit more than most mages' most powerful spells would, and Asta says... Then act like it hurts. It's like, well, no, he's being cocky. Asta, he's being coy. Asta needs to have more interactions with normal people, I think, so he can understand.
He's in the Black Bulls.
He's met
too many weirdos that he connects deeply with, I think. Gyatso, okay, he gets him. He's weird and has a dream and stuff. is a Yami, a weirdo. Black Bull's full of weirdos. He used to have more... There need to be more Rebeccas in his life, basically.
But Rebecca's not going to be an important character, Nick. Why would she bother?
She would have to be if there were more normal people like her.
Anyway. Also, Yuna's still undercover this week. It has to... you have to admit it now. It has to be intentional that he's always undercover.
Yeah, it's got to be intentional at this point.
Asta also does bother to say, "Why are you people collecting magic stones?" And Vento says, "Why should I tell you?" Fair point.
And I love Asta's response to more than anything. "Tell me about the magic stones!" "Why should I, you unloved freak?" "What was that?" Like, it literally stops being words. It's just...
He doesn't have a lot of words to say. I mean, he's only got so many words he knows.
Asta's not the most loquacious of people.
I always like to imagine that Asta just has one level and it's 100% all the time. And that's why even in something that should have just been like, "Oh, that was mean, that hurt me," it's just Asta being unable to comprehend like how infuriated that simple taunt was.
Like in the beach chapter when he was supposed to be the straight man character and he was like, "Why are you guys concerned with things like that right now?"
There's no smaller level to him. He's just high octane every second of the day. I imagine, like, he goes into Starbucks, and he's like, "I'll take, I guess he's asked us, so he'd probably be like, "Give me the most caffeinated beverage you have on the menu." And they're like, "Oh, sorry, we don't have venti-sized cups right now." And it's just, even though it's just a minor inconvenience to his day, he'll just be like, "Why?" And just be like banging his head against the counter for like a minute straight. To the like, "Is a grande fine?" He's like, "Yeah, that's fine. Thank you."
I can totally see him doing that.
He just doesn't have a simple reaction to anything.
He wouldn't be mad at the baristas and then be like, "Oh god, sir, I'm really sorry." He's like, "No, it's fine. It's cool."
It's cool. Head bleeding from his forehead.
"Oh, sir, can we..." "Oh, no, it happens all the time, don't worry."
Oh, boy. Kyoto makes an observation about Veto, because, you know, looks over and sees that his father's been defeated, and he's really shocked to see that. But he makes a quick analysis of Veto, which is his total magic power is so strong that it just rolls off of his body constantly, and that's what's protecting him from attacks. And I like that. That's really cool. You know, they make a big deal out of, "Oh, you know, we are beloved by mana," and it's described as he's got so much of it that it just stops stuff that tries to hurt him because he's constantly exuding it. He's got so much goddamn strength.
And his peck popping skills are off the chart.
It makes him really frightening. Because, I mean, even these bad guys, even if before... You know, Asta can't defeat the strongest people, but he can at least take down their defenses, their magical defenses, and let other people do, you know, kind of the finishing blow and whatnot. But since, yeah, his magic just rolls off of him, Asta's no good, so... Well, let's hope other people are.
Veto says that he's going to find the magic stone, and he's going to kill everyone there until he finds it. He'll kill people in the Underwater Temple, he'll kill people on the beach, until he finds them. And Gyata says, "People I love, my family live here, so I won't let you do that!" And Asta's like, "I'm here too!" they charge in to attack. We get a few panels of them slashing their swords, and Veto pretty easily shrugging them off, and then he lunges out with these kind of beast claw punches, almost, and knocks them both away really easily. And Asta is trying to figure out, like, is he using ki to read what we're going to do? Because he's so fast, I can't even read his. But Veto is just like, "Oh, you guys are boring. You're slow, you're weak. Well, your magic looks trash and you're scum from the sticks, so..."
Do we need a wacky voice for him?
No, we don't.
Oh, okay. I guess you'll be getting your fill of wacky villain voices in the next chapter anyway.
I don't know, we can make a Mojo Jojo.
Do either of us have a good Mojo Jojo?
"Your attacks are pathetic. They are weak. They are useless. You keep on attacking with them, and they do not do anything. You try attacking over and over again. You try assailing, assaulting. They do nothing. Nil. Nada. Zilch. Zippo.
There you go. Nick's got it. All right, now, Annalise, you're Asta, but you have to do it as John F. Kennedy.
No, you don't suck at this.
They charge into attack again. Veto continues blocking. He does get actually hit a couple of times by their attacks, grazing his arms. And Asta's like, yeah, we can do this! And then he punches them again and knocks them clean into the wall. And Veto's like, oh, did you get your hopes up? Because, you know, that still did nothing. And Asta does manage to get up and keep going, but he's bleeding everywhere, covered in wounds. And, so, Veto says, you don't have a shred of hope, and let me tell you why. One, you're weak against throws and other long-distance attacks, especially those that have no magic. And he just throws a giant rock at him.
Like, this is one of those moments I wish, I guess there is a camera in there. I hope this is recorded, so that every future villain strategy when fighting Asta is to just find a huge rock and hurl it at him. It's essentially like that that episode of Powerpuff Girls with, like, the B-talls, where every battle ended with just Fuzzy Lumpkins throwing a giant rock at them. Like, that's every battle with Asta's opening move is just some dude being like, a giant rock!
And Zeta, fighting the rock. But Zeta also follows that up, because Asta does manage to dodge out of the way of the rock by just charging in and saying, two, you're weak against those whose physical abilities are reinforced to be greater than yours. And he just goes super rapid punch anime fight technique, and Asta is still defiant as he's getting beaten up all over, says, so what? And then he gets, I'm not sure exactly what he does, but
he grabs him. He grabs him by his arm.
Well, it looks like he stabs him through the arm.
I think it's just like the way the movement is drawn doesn't have the point to his hand, but you can see in the next panel we really see he like grabs him by the arm and
I think he punches one arm, breaking it, so he drops one sword and then he grabs the other arm to hold him up.
Yeah, I guess you're right actually, because there is a panel.
One cleaver and then he grabs one that has the absorbing sword in it.
Yeah,
and he states that Asta's third weakness is he doesn't know when to quit. But he then goes on to explain, you think as long as you don't give up, it will work out somehow. That arrogance causes you to keep recklessly attacking opponents you can't beat and makes it easy to mortally wound you. The idea of trash like you holding the demon cutting sword and the demon dwelling sword makes me sick. You never had any hope of weaning. Winning. Weaning?
You never had any hope of weaning.
And so he says, go on, scream in despair. And Asta bites his arm. And he goes,
Nick, please, we're actors here. You can do it, you know, actually.
And Beto just goes, what? when he is suddenly attacked.
Well, I like that one of the two of them, or maybe they both said this line also in tandem, where they're like, looks like your animal hearing wasn't sharp enough to pick that up, and it's like, I don't think anyone's hearing would have been sharp enough to understand that. He said it into an arm.
But then they clearly understood it.
Well, I feel like they understood it in their hearts.
They used to ask the stupidity, I think.
Yeah, like, they were like, we know what he was going to say because it's in our hearts. As opposed to this guy who's like, no, literally, I can't understand. You're speaking it through clenched teeth into my skin. What? What's going on?
But yes, Noelle and Wakanda?
Mermaid girl?
Melody Girl, singing.
Kahono,
I think.
Kahono?
Oh, now I'm doubting myself.
Now I feel like that's a character from that new Disney movie trailer. Is The Rock playing her?
Yes! Oh, yeah, you have a new voice!
Oh, great. We've got to do Rock singing voice all the time now.
Do I have a good Rock in person? I don't even know if I could do a Rock.
I don't have a line to say.
Yeah, I could do this if you smell, but that's about it. And I don't want to do it because it would just blow out my mic. You know what? I'm going to go to the other side of the room and I'm going to do my rock impersonation. What the Kahana is cooking?
sound like the Rock's theme at all. What are you doing? Anyway, they arrived. They just saved Asta. Is Chris still over there? Where did he go? There he is. Okay. So, yeah, they are going to fight with Beto now. Really like this chapter, honestly. Had a villain that looked truly intimidating after going up against Asta and completely schooled him.
Are you talking about how much we hated this chapter?
Exactly.
Awesome. You know what I find kind of interesting, though, about this? That speech that Vito gives at the end about, like, you don't know when to quit, you think as long as you don't give up, it'll all work out somehow. I feel like that exact same quote would be used as, like, legitimate character development within World Trigger.
I knew you were going to say that!
Like, it really is that kind of logic, though, that World Trigger kind of deconstructs a lot of the time of, like, the shonen tropes that it kind of pulls away from. I feel like this is, like, the same conversation's going to happen, but instead of Vito, the beast magic villain, it's going to be, like, Kitora saying it to somebody.
As long as you don't give up, you will all work out.
Yeah, or Ninomiya, of course, the most wise and wizened member of the support organization.
Look at him with his tie. You know he's smart because he wears a tie.
He puts on a suit every day. I bet everyone swipes
right. Look at how tall he is.
Everyone swipes right on Ninomiya. Who wouldn't?
Ninomiya.
I enjoyed the chapter, though.
I really... really like this chapter because suck it, all you assholes. Everybody always says, oh, you know, Asta, oh, of course he's the most strong. Oh, he's always winning the battles by himself. Guys, first off, you're not even reading the series if you think that's how the battles go down. But like, he seriously has all these weaknesses that everybody ignores because you see him do something cool, and everybody goes, well, of course. And then they skip the rest of the chapter. He's always getting help from other people. So when he's on his own, of course he's not going to do so great, guys. He's not that strong. That whole rant didn't make a whole lot of sense. I have a lot of feelings.
No. I just think you hid your feeling. You disguised your feeling so much. You said, suck it, haters, which you should have said is suck it, Chris and Nick.
No. This is to you chat people, too.
Okay.
But it, I mean, a lot of people complain that Asta, of course he's going to win the battle, of course he does this, and a lot of people, I've seen it complained about a lot that, like, oh, here's another battle, Asta will win it. And the thing is, in pretty much every battle Asta's been in, technically he has won, but it's almost always like a 3-against-1 sort of thing, where he is one person with two, you know, friends fighting together against one bad guy. So it's never, it's rarely that he actually wins fights by himself. He's won 4 fights by himself in almost a year and a half of this manga. And it's Seke, it's the guy from the first chapter, it's Magna, and it's that priest he just defeated. Every other battle has been even odds, like multiple people versus multiple people, or like 3-1, 6-1. It's always in favor of numbers with Asta's side. So yes, he's a shonen hero. There are things that will drive people insane because he's so strong and he's got this magical power, well, anti-magic, that nobody else has, but he's a shonen hero, guys. If you're gonna hate on him for actual reasons. And there are plenty of reasons to actually hate on him. Don't get me wrong, I love Asta, but he is really dumb, and he's kind of annoying sometimes.
The only thing I want is when Lee shows back up again in the series, he just has a bunch of really big rocks behind him. He's like, your weakness is revealed!
He's like, I know the key now.
He's like, you thought you were helpless against one rock. What about 7 large rocks? That's what Asta's like, oh no!
Hopefully by then they'll have a rock magic user.
Oh, or Asta will get a third sword, the rock cutting sword. They're like, no! Your only weakness!
Yeah, I really like this chapter. I mean, I don't want Asta to get beaten up, but I really think it's really good for his character to just get his ass handed to him. I mean, he's got his ass handed to him several times, but I mean, the fact that he can't really go on from this point, it seems. And other people would be doing the fighting. And it's Girl Squad!
Yeah, I was gonna say, do you think then that Noel and Kohana? Whatever her name is.
The entire village of Kohana.
that Noel and the cast of Naruto will come together to beat him?
No, I do not think they will be able to defeat him. I think they'll be able to get away from him if they so try, but I don't think.
What if this is Clone Guy's time to shine?
Oh, it's time for Gray!
You know what? I think we might keep the mystique a little, because we noticed you haven't cut away to any of those other fights going on, really. So I wouldn't be shocked if we just cut back to it. Everyone's like, oh, hey, what was going on with the others? You see, like, Gray transformed back into another member of, I wanted to call them Fairy Tale, the Black Bulls. And it's just him, like, over-defeated by it. Everyone's like, what did he do? Like, how did he beat them? I don't know. That's just me, if you want to keep the mystique up. Where's Gaush?
He is fighting elsewhere.
Okay. I was going to say, did he interrupt? I know he beat somebody.
I don't think he's actually found another. I don't think he's found one of Veto's followers.
Okay. I guess the last time we saw him was just in that, like, four-panel, two-page spread where, like, the badass members of the guild beat somebody.
Right, and then he got word from Yami.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
All right. Let's move on to Bleach. Last time, Ichigo, in his new stupid form, combined Getsuga Tensho with a Grand Ray Zero to make one big combination attack. Yubak reacts to this in the current chapter by saying it is a fitting technique, considering that Ichigo has so many different sets of powers. You're telling me, man. But then he just kind of clamps his hands down on this remaining arc of power, and I guess shatters it? I can't really tell. Does he throw it past it? I don't know what he does, because you see him, like, grab it, and then the next time that you see his body, it's gone. So I don't know what happened to it, because that happens in Bleach sometimes. but Yubak's just like, well, is this it then? And he goes on this long rant as Ichigo keeps on attacking him by saying, I know what you're thinking. He underestimates me. That's why he won't use his ability. He doesn't know my power when I'm fused with a hollow. It's now or never. The only chance to defeat him is now.
Isn't this Ichigo thinking?
That's him mocking Ichigo's thoughts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he says, that's exactly right. But that moment has passed. I have eyeballs everywhere.
I want to see somebody cosplay this.
Eyes everywhere.
Eyes everywhere. And then the mustache, of course.
The mustache is very important.
Can you do an authentic Yuabak cosplay with a fake mustache? Or do you have to grow out?
That's a difficult mustache to grow, because it's got it grows all the way around to the mutton chops too.
But can you consider it a true success without a real mustache?
I mean, it's like playing Santa Claus without a real beard, you know?
Yeah.
You can do it, but it's not really right. You know?
You're going to scare the children. Mm-hmm.
All those children are going to go up to the multi-eyeball thing.
Santa, you're back! What do I want for Christmas? Pull off the beard. Oh, you're a hideous monster! I thought you just had a lot of pretty eyes! They run away.
So, Jirbok kind of flat out admits that Ichigo did catch him off guard with that attack, and he vows that he's just going to be constantly on guard from now on as we get to our chapter, which is Horn of Salvation 2. It's going to be one of those, I guess.
I hope we get to Horn of Salvation like 16. Like, just the point where Nick's like, oh my god, is this going to be deicide?
So Ichigo attacks with two swords. And there's a really confusing bit, because not a lot of attention is paid to the fact that Yubak whips out a second sword, and then he goes, did you think only you can hold two swords?
It's just like, I thought I was the special snowflake of this series.
Well, I mean, he is. Ichigo kind of dashes away after he avoids this backhanded slash from Yubak, and he lands on the ground. Yubak goes, be careful, there's a trap there. And this blade of dark energy shoots up through Ichigo's foot.
only he was wearing shoes.
Yes, if only. If only.
But totally protected.
That's the thing, is that, you know, Hollows don't wear shoes. Quincy don't wear shoes. Soul Reapers don't wear shoes. Where was he going to get shoes in his many-faceted transformation fusion?
Because he's also part human, and humans wear shoes. Or at least socks.
Well, see, the thing is, actually, that they all wear different manners of foot gear. And so they all just, like, negated each other. Like, they couldn't decide what shoe he was going to wear. So
they should have just stacked up.
Oh, he just wears, like, six shoes.
He's just wearing three sets of boots, like those assholes in League of Legends that troll you. I've got all the boots! This makes it go really fast, right? No. Iobak basically is Maki Ichigo everywhere he tries to gain purchase by putting his feet against something. Blaze just shoot up from the ground. By the way, if you get injured that badly, you shouldn't be able to fucking walk anymore, I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's...
Because he's just kind of going, ow! He's got giant wounds under both his feet now. You can see blood spraying everywhere. How is he moving?
I asked the same question watching Game of Thrones last week.
Soul Reapers!
It's just a flesh wound.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You don't need feet to move.
Iobak says, So you know that I can see the future. And Ichigo says, oh, I get it. So because you can see the future, you can plant traps where I'll put my foot down. But if that's the case, why couldn't you connect on your last attack? And Iobak slashes his sword through the air. And Ichigo's like, ha! He missed again! So he doesn't see everything! His ability has limitations, and I just need to find out what they are!
Or die trying.
Yeah. And Iobak says, you are looking for the hold of my ability. The future can be changed, evolving in the midst of battle. We'll let you step into a future different from the one I see. That is what you are thinking. Well, then stand still. Right there. And Blade starts fucking shoot out from the wall and spear each go through the shoulders. And he's like, why did I do what he said? And finally, Ichigo's like, oh, that one hurt!
Who cares about my feet but my shoulder blade? Ah!
And Su Yubak says, you are mistaken. The future doesn't lie on a single path. The future is like grains of sand scattered before me. Each one of those seemingly isolated grains of sand is the future. To put it in another way, time is infinite, and there are many different parallel universes. As for this, what he's saying.
For example, somewhere out there is an alternate universe where instead of putting my shampoo on my head and my body wash on my body, I do the opposite. And that was a terrifying reality to consider.
There is an alternate universe where that one over there wears clothing that does not accentuate her giant bosom. I mean, that's really messed up reality, but...
There's an alternate universe out there where Halibel isn't still imprisoned, and maybe will never be saved.
Actually, she's right over there. You just haven't been looking at her.
Yeah. And somewhere out there, there is the universe we all fear. The one where Chad does things. It's just like Chad with a really big arm. He's like, I've punched a lot of things.
He's got all for one's arm now. So, Iobak says, you know, there are many different paths. Changing the future means you just jump from one grain of sand to another. And I can see every grain of sand from high above. So please do not give up hope, Ichigo. Stay the way you are. Keep jumping from the rolling grains of sand called fate or possibility with your eyes shut. That is hope for humans. Do not lose hope. There's nothing more painful for a parent than killing a child in despair. And Ichigo is just like, fuck this Bankai.
Which, of course, we won't see for another 18 chapters.
Probably.
When we go back to other fights.
Right.
And we'll forget by the time it gets back.
All right, Ichigo is doing his Bankai.
I would disagree with that. I think next chapter will be a 2-page spread of the new Bankai. Then we cut away.
Oh,
and by the time we come back, we're like, "What? Oh, right, he revealed Bankai. I forgot. We just saw the stupid design last time."
There's a lot of possibility to that, yeah.
What if his Bankai form has two horns, Nick? But they're both from the same side.
Okay, I actually love this form that Ichigo is in right now because it's so dumb. But love it, like, I have a thing, like, I like horns on people. I loved After Crater Neighbors, guys. They had great horns. And so, like, he has one of his horns, and I'm like, this is great, but it looks so dumb. It's so stupid looking. The series is so stupid, guys. I love this form of Ichigo. Like, what can you do next, Kubo? What could you do to make this more retarded?
We've had some people, those who were like, there are some people who listen to the podcast who do like Bleach, and you're welcome to it, even though, I mean, I pity you. To point out, well, Ichigo's new form resembles the form that Tensuzan Getsu took, his spirit took, when the two combined together in order to fight him, back when he was doing his Mugetsu training. That's true. I thought that form looked stupid then, as well. A single horn over going this way looks stupid, okay?
It would be so much better if he had, like, two horns, one on each side, of course. But, like, they were small or something. Like, even it out, man. Like, it's one thing to have the markings on one side of the face, but, like, one horn on one... I don't know, whatever.
There's well, a level of asymmetry that's tolerable.
It's not the one horn. It is the size of the horn combined with only being one. Like,
it's huge.
His full hollow form that he took when he fought Ulquiorra that had the two horns, that looked perfectly fine.
Yeah, they were all evened out, and it looked kind of cool.
It looked menacing. This one looks...
Yeah.
It looks like he's going to kind of... His head should be tilting because there's too much weight on one side and it's straining his neck.
I mean, this series is... I used to love Bleach so much. I mean, I hate on Bleach pretty strongly, like some people hate on my baby Black Clover. But... But it just... It's so ridiculous. But... Kubo's art is still so neat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of these pages, like, when you see Uobok with all the eyes, and you just see his fantastic...
I've got all these eyes!
Like, it's... Okay, that looks ridiculous to me, too, but it's really cool looking, and, like, just a bunch of these panels look really neat, but the story is...
I like that the eyes aren't, like, consistent. It's like a kind of mass, and the eyes basically poke
like
out.
It's nebulous, and, like, yeah, it looks like they move around and change size. And
don't get me wrong, also, like, this chapter, I'm mostly okay with it, because Uobok's explanation and his, you know, this way of explaining stuff, where he's like, no, this is why my power is so great, is I can see all of the future laid out before me, and I know how to manipulate it properly. He's basically like, if Jin's power were complete bullshit, which is fine, because he's the final villain.
Yeah. No, I mean, as far as recent Bleach chapters go, it's one of the better ones, definitely, I think.
And also, I like this great takedown of Ichigo's like, I just need to keep on trying to defeat fate, and he's just like, yeah, keep on doing that, because otherwise this isn't gonna be any fun. Keep on foolishly hoping, my son.
It's so much more entertaining to see you struggle.
That's a great plan, Ichigo. Try really hard.
No one would have thought of that before. Alright, so, moving along then, we'll go into Fairy Tail.
With the reveal of the greatest villain in all of the series.
Fairy Tail, chapter 489, Universe 1. And people have been bringing up that the past series of chapters have been slowly doing a countdown. You know, it was the fourth guest, the third seal, the two of us will go back. I don't know how far back it went, because I think it at least went
to... going to be titled Fairy Tail Zero.
Yeah, which might make sense considering what happens in this chapter. So, last time, because Mest is an idiot, just the dumbest man alive...
Every negative thing you can think of to call Mest applies...
Yeah, you frugal motherfucker. So... we see August's reaction.
All right, guys, it's time to split the bill. He needs the money to pay for his dead sister.
Mest only had soup. Really? It looks like you have lobster. Mest only had soup. Well, if you only had soup, we shouldn't force him to pay for the bill. Just that tip. We don't tip. And just him being like, But the waitress still comes by and she's like, I didn't get mine in your drone. I know you're not tipping me. So August...
Change my memory. I've got it written down in your receipt.
Yeah, well, after I leave, then they can pay. Who cares? So August's face goes black. All of his skin seems to go black as well. And Brandish only has the chance to utter Grandpa before August just kind of reaches out and touches her, and she just passes out, or her brain explodes. I'm not exactly sure. I assume he just passes her out, like knocks her out, because I guess he doesn't want to kill her the same way he does everyone else. But then we just see, like, a giant kind of explosion as he just says, melt. And there's a giant gwahoom panel.
Great sound effect.
It's a great sequence, because you can see, because Natsu covered up Lucy instinctively. But, so we see, you know, the explosion going off and Natsu getting hit by it, and Happy getting hit by it, and Mess getting hit by it. It's like a freaking nuclear explosion went off.
So brutal.
Yeah. And you can see it. They're seeing the explosion from where they are in Fairy Tail. You know, it's the northern continent there are, or the northern part of the continent there are now. They can see it all the way from there. And everyone's commenting, like, what is that light? What is going on? Or, sorry, not from the north. They're on the eastern continent. Sorry. The other fight's going up in the north. We then cut over to Kana, who uses Fairy Glitter, finally, to break the crystal and free Mavis's body, which she then catches.
With very, very carefully placed fragments of the crystal to cover up her nipples.
Yes.
Thank you, Hiro. Thank you.
Those were very tastefully fallen crystal pieces, I must admit.
Very, very, very thoughtful crystal fragments they are. It's like, no, she may be 700 years old or however 100, whatever, but she still looks like she's 8.
And Kana's asking, like, are you alright? And her response is, my muscles must have atrophied because I can't move like I want to. And that's where the scene ends, and I can't tell if it was supposed to be like tee-hee, like a joke, or if it was supposed to be tragic, like, oh, my body's been in stasis so long I literally can't move.
Well, Kana's reaction is just of relief, because she is actually alive. So, she might be a bit sickly right now, but her plan did work. So,
I guess it's kind of hard.
I think that's something really important.
It's just such a weird line to, like, is that part of Mavis's gimmick I didn't get? Like, her being, like, overly analytical and, like, not reading the situation?
We know a lot about Mavis, but I've never really gotten a firm grasp of her personality. Because if you, like, look back, it's like, okay, well, when she first was showing up in spirit form, she was, like, the strategist, supposedly, for the guild. She's gotten a few moments where she's supposed to look badass. Then she had her really big tragic backstory with the Zera flashback. And through all that time, she's just kind of... It's more important what her role is than what her character is, you know? One of those kind of, like, not very good character writing kind of things, you know? There doesn't seem to be much consistency with her.
Yes. So, we cut away again, this time to Irina and Actalagia. And she just makes a comment like, well, shall we begin? And her staff glows, and then all of a sudden, like, a giant fire wave comes out of it, and, all the ground beneath Aquilogia starts to break, and he's like, an enchantment of the very air! And all of a sudden, like, an enormous piece of the earth just explodes backwards underneath him and sends him flying, so she can control everything. It's, you know, the earth, the air, everything is laced with her magic, and she can control it thusly. Which Aquilogia only seems to be kind of excited by. He's like, ha ha ha, enchanter! And he casts the magic that just causes the ground beneath her to explode. And she backflips out of the way, but, you know, they're having their talk about, like, oh, you're stronger than you appear. Oh, well, you're impressive for someone trained by the Black Wizard. As there's just the enormous crater of where she once was standing before them, like, and you can't even see a bottom from it. So it just kind of is meant to display how absurdly powerful these two characters are, as they they have a conversation, and Zach Melanchi is like, so you're trying to tell me not to interfere with things? And she's like, well, it's weird you say that, humans, because you were ones yourself originally, I thought. But yes, you're right. I don't want you to interfere. You know, I want the Majesty to get serious because I want a swift end to this war. And all of a sudden, this bright light starts coming out of the floor. And Akalagia, even, you know, himself, does not realize what this is. And she explains it. Yes, this is a magic that did not exist 400 years ago. It's a new generation of magic. All of the Earth is enchanted by her magic, and she's transforming it to her will. And it just kind of cuts away to a bunch of different characters noting that this light is happening. Including a couple of characters that had to stop and be like, who's this? And I'm like, all right, Dee Maria. I was like, why are we cutting to some random person tied up in a jail cell? And I was like, oh, right, her. And the last person we see is Xerath, who is surprisingly pretty shocked by this. He knows, like, Irene, did you actually use that magic? And our final page is just a bright light with rays shooting out of the darkness. It says, World Construction Magic Universe 1?
So, this seems like a big deal.
It could be. I'm wondering if it, as it implies, seems to be like she just created a whole new kind of, like, universe, essentially. Like, if she essentially remade everything. But I don't... Then I'm like, well, how would that serve to expedite the process of things?
Yeah, the only thing we know is that she is somehow enchanting the entire continent. So is she remaking the landscape of the frickin' continent? What is going on?
Yeah,
it's one of those things, it's weird because we know the scope of it, but we don't know exactly what she's doing. So this better be, like, a big thing, because otherwise, like, it's really big! And then it's disappointing, you know? Well, that's literally the only idea I have of this, or rather, the only impression I have off of this is this is a really big deal!
If they did...
Which will be explained next time.
Well, if they did do, like, a new universe thing, the advantage to that is then you could bring Shelley's magic back and bring Gajeel back. You could actually say if things had stayed the way they were, those consequences would have remained the same, but this is a way to kind of get it out if there's, like, a new universe kind of brought from this. But I just don't get, from what we heard about her, like, it's not even like they're losing the war and this is like a reset button or anything like that. They're still in firm control. There's still seemingly no way to defeat Xerath, at least from any of our hero characters.
And they're still up, and she's a really powerful
Yeah, knight. There's still three huge characters. I think there's still even another one of the Spriggan 12 left out there beyond them.
I think that if you're talking, like, suddenly they go to a parallel universe where it's mostly the same, but Akinologia has somehow been taken out of the fight, and somehow because of this, Gajeel comes back and we're like, God damn it!
Well, it's just that it's that sense of like Flashpoint, like essentially remade a universe in a way, and now it's like a new thing to play. I don't know, because the way Fairy Tail was working, I was actually like under the idea, I was like, we might have Fairy Tail end this year. This is something that could potentially give it some more time to play with. But it's one of those things where I'm just like, if that's what they're doing, then her lines here don't make much sense to me on face value, because I don't see how this makes anything faster. Hey, we'll find out soon enough. I'm sure next week we'll get our answers to a couple things. But it's a hard chapter to gauge, just because I feel like I don't know enough information about what actually happened here. Exactly, the new 52 of Fairy Tale. That's kind of what it almost feels like.
Which we don't really need, though.
I would be okay with it if it brought Gajeel back. I just want Gajeel back.
I want Gajeel and Levy to come back so that they can have that imagined future where they have kids.
Yeah.
I want Gajeel to come back, but it's a new reality where he isn't in love with Levy. So no! It's the ultimate tragedy.
Oh my god. Oh, that actually has, like, because maybe, like, he would have to, like, remember or have to, like, fall in love with her again.
Oh shit, I'm getting Lost flashbacks to season 6.
Oh no, Chris, you accidentally suggested something interesting.
It's a flash sideways. They have to remember. And then, and then fucking, like, Levy's at a vending machine and she goes down. She's like, stupid machine ate my last dollar. And he's like, here, use my dodge. It's like, oh, we could go Dutch. And they hold the candy bar at the same time. And then they remember. And this beautiful music starts playing. And I start crying, but manly in that sort of way. Because I'm a tough dude. And it's just a beautiful relationship that I respect. And
you
then
put this on your Tinder.
Yeah, and I can put it on Tinder. And I'm like, ladies, I cried today. Like, I did a new picture of me sobbing. Like, I cried today looking at Lost.
Oh, God.
That's fairy tale this week.
Well, that went somewhere interesting. Let's move on to Food Wars. Shokugeki no Soma, 170 Frozen Thoughts. Which is about Soma and Erina disagreeing over whether or not they like the Disney movie Frozen.
Hey. Yeah, that's... Where do you guys stand? Because Erina clearly is of the mind of, like, harumph. Go back to hand-drawn animation
not,
or not.
Erina would not enjoy it. She would be like, no, it's too popular.
Elsa had an entire kingdom. She should have been happy. Magic powers and a kingdom. What a fool.
Someone's like, no, man, it was legit good.
He's like, I liked it.
Whatever. And then he's just, you know, he would totally be like, yeah, whatever. And she'd be like really adamant about like, no, it sucked.
Oh, yeah. Like he doesn't have much of an opinion on him. He's like, I didn't really see it. I kind of heard Let It Go and it was okay. And she's like, no, it's trite.
And then Megumi comes in and she's like, remember when Olaf was going to sacrifice himself for us?
And that's when Erina leaps forward and starts strangling her.
Anyway, so Soma's presenting his dish for Erina. Soma explains that it is tempura egg rice bowl, which looks very pretty.
Oh god, it looks so good.
It looks very, very nice. So everyone who is listening in on the conversation is like, wait, what? What? How did he do that? Did he deep fry an egg in order to make this? How the hell did he do that? So they're trying to figure it out, and Erina is, you know, poking and prodding at the dish, and I'm not sure exactly how to describe it, but the egg white basically has sort of been boiled, but the yolk itself is soft boiled. So it's very, very weird, and
that's special Yukihara style, Nick.
So someone's like, haha, You're amazed by how I managed that. You want to know how I did, don't you? You want to know
so
how I did,
pleased.
Right?
I
and ask me how I did, and Erina's like, ugh.
You know, I feel like at this point, someone needs to just be like, huh, okay. And he's like, well, aren't you excited? He's like, well, no, because you've done the whole, like, something soft and liquidy inside something hard thing surprise, like, 6 times now, so I'm kind of expecting it at this point.
He'd be so heartbroken.
He's like, but I froze an egg. Like, yeah, that was kind of new. A different surprise between soft things inside of hard things. Like, you bitch.
So, the key was...
You're always wearing the same nightgown! And then she starts crying. She's like, no, I was supposed to bring that up!
This would never happen if I were a queen, Elsa.
I would freeze you solid!
I would make it through my stress! And then I would tie my hair up so that I could take it down again. I have people trying to match me up with a boyfriend even though I'm a strong, independent woman on my own.
I make small monsters just once, but I apparently have the ability to create life, which seems really huge, but whatever.
It's magic! So somebody explains that he used a frozen egg and fried it after dipping it in tempura batter. And okay. He goes into this long explanation that I don't think that I can actually recount in full detail. Like many of the things in Shokugeki no Soma.
I was so confused. Like, I had to read this part 4 times because the first 3 times I did not understand it. I was like, so we took the frozen egg and dipped it in the tempura batter and then fried it, but what about the shell? Oh, wait, let me go again. It took me 4 times to figure out that he shells it and then batters it and then fries it. I was so confused, guys.
This is why I could never be a Totsuki chef, because this is so much effort. Like, I'm like,
so
oh my
much.
God. It's not even just the preparation time in cooking it. I'm like, I had to put an egg in the freezer 6 hours from now, just like previously, so it would be frozen enough.
And then he says, and that's it. It's simple, quick, and really tasty. Like, really?
Well, if you know exactly what to do, but it's a complicated explanation anyway, though. So, yeah, he's really proud of himself for having come up with this. Yes.
We need to do a special episode at some point, Nick, where we try to cook things from Shokugeki no Soma, and we talk about our results on a pod. Maybe that'll be a bonus pod at some point.
I'm pretty sure we could probably pull off his breakfast egg dish. Well, that one was one that he just, like, hammered out. So.
Could we, Nick?
Well, he mass-produced it. I'm sure if we had several attempts and a full dozen eggs, we could pull it off. Once. But Arina is like, okay, so you came up with a crazy cooking method. I get it. But whatever. Just because you came up with a novel idea, that's not enough to impress me. Egg dishes are simple, which means both the chef's skill and the quality of the ingredients will stand out in the final dish. And so, but she is agreeing to eat it. And so everyone is like, what's going on? And Ryoko, a.k.a. the member of Totsuki, not Totsuki, the member of the Polar Star dorm that I always forget about. Alright, there's another girl in addition to Bunhead Girl in Megami. She says, well, I remember Yukihiro went to go shopping and he came back with a whole ton of really cheap eggs because they were on sale. And Yusaku's like, oh no, she's going to have to taste really low quality eggs. I love how they're still freaking out, like, if Arina tastes low-quality food, she may literally die! So she tries it, and there's this really slow build-up, because Arina says, I knew from the moment I tasted it that the egg he used was neither a silky egg nor any of the many other luxury brand eggs I know. Your dish isn't fit for a gourmet table, at best. This is a dish meant for commoners. So why am I orgasming? Oh, this is like the most explicit one we've gotten in a while. Because there are sound effects covered or not.
Those are some nice sound effects
there. Yeah, her sound effects that are literally quiver, 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 quiver.
Like, it's not even like tasteful Naruto sexy jutsu smoke. Not even clothes exploding off and the shards are in the right places. Not even an imagination spell where something is covering her up or she's in a weird outfit. No, she's just naked and there's sound effects over her.
Yeah, just everything that would be precious and unrevealable in a shonen series is just covered up by quivering sound effects. Has any food ever brought you to this state? Where you're like, no. I feel nude and quivering at the thought of this food and how good it is.
Yes, in bad ways.
Oh,
okay.
Oh my skin.
So you've gotten the peanut butter covered squid tentacle.
Yeah, I was like, so you got like tentacle head tied by food before.
Never in a positive way.
I think Fogo de Chao was pretty close, or Texas Day Brazil. There are some pieces of steak they have there that you're just like, oh, I'm just going to take off all my clothes. And then like the waiter comes by, he's like, sir, please, there are children here.
Put that on your Tinder.
Like another shot like me with all my clothes off. Oh, me at Texas Day, with like steak dripping out of my mouth, like me at Texas Day, Brazil. Great day.
You're going to get so many hits, man. Oh my God. Ladies love steak.
We got an email from Tinder. Please never use our service again. I didn't know they responded to people individually.
So, Soma explains that by freezing the eggs, the robust flavor of the yolks gets even richer. So actually, because he used low-quality dishes, it actually made the taste even better. The luxury brand dishes have strong flavors from the get-go, so freezing it would be overpowering. By using lower end stuff and then freezing it, you actually get the best example. You get the best combination there. And so all the people who are listening are like, oh, wow, yeah, he actually had a reason for doing that. You know, good job. And then Arina thinks to herself, well, then why did you use eggs for your dish? And Soma says, because the first time that we met, the theme you gave me was egg. So don't you think this is the perfect dish to sell things between us? And there's a weird couple of panels where Arina, like, her face, her facial expression changes. I'm not sure exactly what's going on, because she... It sort of seems like she's going to say one thing, and then she stops and says something else. That's the impression I get. Anyway, so she says, well, why did you think of that? I mean, it's critical for eggs to be fresh. That's common sense. I've never seen a single chef who would freeze eggs, and you're not using high-quality ingredients. Why did you do this? And someone just says, because it's more interesting. You know, people who think that there's only right answer to cooking probably won't go on to discover something better. But the biggest reason is, and before he gives his reason, Arina flashbacks again to the time that she met Saiba. And she asked, you know, how did you come up with all this? You know, all your dishes are so amazing and original, and even though they're eccentric, so how did you know they would, you know, come out this way? And Deutra was like, I didn't know. You know, when I try out a new recipe, it's a half egg, I guess, and half a total gamble. Just today, your grandfather was my guinea pig for a handful of new dishes. And since then, I was like, this and Arina asked, well, why would you do that? And both Deutra and Soma give the same answer to Arina's questions in the past and present, which is, because it's no fun if you already know what you're going to get. And Arina remembers... I get it. You know, this is the kind of cooking that I want to make. And she chows into Soma's dish and just eats the whole bowl before setting it down in front of her. And she's crying while she does it. And she puts the bowl down and Soma takes his headband off, and that's the end of the chapter.
I really like his wistful smile in that last panel. Because usually, you know, after he finishes and it's...
You liked it, didn't you? I know you liked it.
Like, he pulls it off like, yeah, that's right. And he's just like, yep. He doesn't need to say anything, you know?
Being bizarrely respectful for once.
This chapter, like, I've seen some discussion about Azami's methods, about like, oh, well, yeah, you can produce really good, you know, food this way, and look at this middle schooler that made this amazing dish, yada yada, and maybe this is good. And I think they have some points to that logic, but this chapter totally shattered that, in my opinion. Like, yeah, you can make good things, but it's not interesting.
It's
fun, you know?
Like, it's, you know, mass production versus independent artist.
Like, you can have something that's really good. Like, you can have a really good steak every day of your life, and it's an excellent steak, but it's going to get boring. You know, it's fun to mix it up.
Mm-hmm. You say this, and like, I was like, oh, I had burgers, homemade burgers, like the 8th time in a row, just because it fits on my macros, like the alteration between tacos and burgers and chicken. No, I'm like, and I cook them all the exact same way every time.
No, this is a really succinct but very compelling explanation for Juitro and Soma's viewpoint on things. You know, we got explanations for why Azami was wrong in previous chapters. You know, he's making everyone just a miniature him. There was that thing with the one teacher who says, like, all I see whenever I eat one of these dishes, it's impeccably made, but all I see is Azami's face. I don't see this, you know, the soul of any of the people who actually made this. I just see his. So we got that idea that, okay, Azami's wrong. But this was the one that really hit, like, this is why Soma and everyone on his side is right. And it's, yeah, you know, it's one of those dishes, it's one of Soma's experimental dishes that worked out, and it does all tie together with, okay, you know, eggs were used as the dish for the one before. And I really like Arina's process of dealing with things. This is a really good chapter, I think, from top to bottom. You know, good stuff from Soma, a cool dish. You know, it's not the most, in my opinion, the most delicious looking one Soma's made. It's a really damn good looking one. But it's a really clever one. And that's, I think, what I like more about when someone has a big important dish, is it seems very clever.
Mm-mm.
And, yeah, I really liked it.
I'm kind of mad about this dish. I mean, I think it looks great, but I don't like runny eggs. I don't like soft-shell eggs. But this looks so good. Like, oh, I don't like runny eggs, but I want to eat this. Stupid Food Wars.
Fuck you, Soma.
I'm going to find somebody to make me some tempura eggs, and I will eat them, even if they have runny yolks. I will be happy about it. Damn it.
Ooh.
Thank you, Food Wars.
Oh, I have a great idea. Nick, we do a Shokugeki on our day, like as a buzz pod. We make this food. Then we package them up and send them to Annalise at the taste test. I'm sure that meat will keep in that week-long trip over to San Diego or San Francisco.
Just like media mail it over.
Yeah.
Put an ice pack or two in it.
Exactly. Yeah. And we just give you simple reheating instructions.
The soaking wet box that smells showed up for you.
The FBI are like, somebody's sending, weird chemical weapons to you. We're gonna have to talk to you, man.
No, those are just eggy surprise. Those are just pork buns.
God. Good chapter. Let's move on. My Hero Academia, number 94, from teacher to disciple. Last time, All Might managed to utilize his arm being destroyed in order to transfer energy to his other arm and punch off one across the face, striking a critical blow. I think that it's All For One who is saying this. He says, well, that one was too weak. You know, he managed to get a good hit on him, but it hasn't finished him off. And Toshinori says, that's because I didn't put my back into it! And he muscles up his right arm again and steps into his punch and destroys All For One's face.
It's this amazing symbol, too. He's like, that's because I didn't put my back into it! And then we see a shot of the fire and him saying, farewell, All For One! And just this, you know, like, full-page spread of just All For One's face being just exploded in this cool, like, United States of Smash, but then it immediately is followed up with him saying, you know, the shot of him, like, hobbled over this little ember, him saying, farewell, one for all.
You know, I really like that. If you look at the size of the text for the farewell, the all for one, and then the farewell, one for all, like, they're about the same size, so you'd almost read them mentally, like, shouting, but the farewell all one for all, it just feels so quiet.
And it does feel like legitimately this was the it. Like,
yeah,
this was the end of All Might as we know him. Because there's never going to be an attack you could make in his, like, naming convention pattern bigger than United States of Smash.
North America of Smash?
I guess.
Pangea!
I don't want to fucking include Canada, though.
United Nations except for Canada Smash! Alright.
Oh, what a cool move, though. God. The series. Stupid series.
We get a couple of pages of people just reacting to this moment. You know, because we get this a massive shockwave from the attack, this blowing Gran Torino away, the news helicopter is being rocked up in the air, All For One is knocked out, and all the people who are watching on TV are just watching silently. And then Toshinori raises his fist up in victory, and then suddenly he's muscled up again in his full All Might form, and he's completely powered up again, raising his fist up as all the people start chanting his name, and the, you know, newscaster's like, he won! All Might won! He's still standing! Yes! And, I forget the name of the Edge, the ribbon hero. I forgot last time too, but he's like, "Oh man, he's gonna overdo it here. You know, he can't keep releasing his power like this." And Gran Torino just says, "Just let him go." And he remembers, you know, when Toshinori was vowing to be the pillar that supports the country, and so he's just saying himself, yeah, he's the symbol of peace, and this is his final act as the number one hero. Just
Gran Torino looks so sad.
He looks tired, too.
Yeah, just exhausted. Yeah, just sad.
I love his line, too. He's still on the job. Like, just that way of phrasing it. How it's like a duty for him. part of that job he's held on for so long and seeing that as...
The symbol of peace.
Yeah. It's a sad way to put it, but it's, very fitting at the same time.
More heroes arrive on the scene, start rescuing people from the debris. Newscasters go on about rescue efforts are continuing onward. The villain behind this catastrophe is being detained at this very moment. Ah, he is being loaded into an Iron Maiden, and we can see that All Might and company are taking all precautions. And Toshinori notices the camera crew, and he just suddenly points over at them. He doesn't say anything, he just points. Then there's more rescue efforts going on out in, I guess, the city where Deku and company are watching. And I think it's Ida who says it. I'm not sure. But one of them says, we should let the pros know that Bakugo's here and he's safe with us. And Deku's like, yeah, okay. And then finally Toshinori does say something while he's still pointing at the camera, which is, it's your turn. And all the people in the crowd are like, he's so cool, yeah! And Deku's narration says, to the casual listener, that brief message seemed like a warning directed at other criminals still out there, telling them the symbol of peace hadn't been broken. For me, it meant the exact opposite. It meant, I've done all I can. So...
Oh, my heart!
And yeah, Deku is crying because he knows that Toshinori's done, and it's up to him now. So then we flash forward a bit to the next day in super extra maximum security prison, where All for One is tied down. He's got like some sort of breathing apparatus hooked in, strapped into a wheelchair as he's being wheeled around by a guard, and he says, where am I? And the guard says, you shut up! Don't you know where you are? You'd be getting off too easy with the death penalty, so this is where your kind of scum gets locked up. And so L for One says, oh, okay, it's a prison. I couldn't tell. There's so many sensors. And he's like, what are you talking about? Are you blind? He's like, well, I have scar tissue over my eyes, so yes. he says, beyond just the rustling of your clothes and vibrations in the air, I've got my infrared quirk, which is how I managed to sense my way through the world for the past 6 years with much difficulty. Sounds and vibrations inform me of physical movement, plus I can sense people's emotions and the surrounding layout. But these sensors render my sensing abilities all but useless. What a shame. So, basically pointing out, yes, he has suffered tremendous wounds as well. All Might wasn't the only one who had to deal with a debilitating injury over the years that they've been fighting with each other. But, he doesn't mention the whole, ragdoll power. Because her quirk's been stolen. So.
Sure.
I think that maybe he's just keeping that. Maybe he's trying to keep that close to the chest. I don't know.
Maybe he didn't take it. Maybe he took it, just but it's...
Put it in,
maybe he put it in Shigaraki or something.
Yeah.
Also, we get a note that he's in the same prison as Stain. All for One is just thinking to himself after he's put into his cell. He's like, all right, I lost All Might. I did put up a pretty pathetic struggle, but you were wrong. At the end of our battle, you left the future in your pupil's hands. You chose the wrong moment to bow out. You missed your chance to die. A teacher's job is to raise their wards to be independent. He relied on his teacher, and now you've locked me up far out of his reach. All you've done is stoke his rage, and now he's ready to take charge. He has allies. He's learned how to recruit more. You'll be fine, Tomura Shigaraki. Your experiences, your hatred, your regrets, use them to fuel yourself. Now, it's your turn. And we get a very cool two-panel page to close things out on with, Deku on the bottom and Shigaraki on the top, with all of his hands surrounding him, and he looks so pissed off.
Oh, God. Those eyes, man.
So, I did like this chapter. I was a little bit surprised by the decision to put All for One in prison, though. I was taken aback by that. But, I mean, the whole message of it is like, okay, you know, the past generation is basically done. The war continues now across generations, and it's the next generation's turn to pick things up, which is a big moment.
Yeah, so. Both of the teachers have fallen just in different ways. Mm-hmm. So now it's up to their students to continue on it. And I do like that menacing kind of foreshadowing at the end of like, oh, you know, you may have arrested me, but now all you've done is anger my student. You've placed me out of his reach, and, you know, now he has a reason to be more, to hate you even more. You've just stoked his rage. And I like the kind of symbolic echo, too, of All for One thinking, now it's your turn after the same thing happened for All Might. It's very, very well done all the way through, and it's a nice kind of closing to the All Might kind of moment, too, of having him, like, United States of Smash, this big moment.
Good stuff. Alright, so we had no One Piece. We could talk a little bit about Nisekoi, I guess, because we're going to have to hit Toriko after this anyway. And that's it.
I'm just going to nap through Nisekoi.
Well, the big thing in Nisekoi was Chijuge said that she was going to marry Raku. All of them fought over him for a little bit in the past. And then, basically, Chijuge overheard Raku confiding that to Onodera that he liked her over the other girls. And so Chijuge basically decided to step aside so that she wouldn't get in the way of it. They did this whole thing because they were inspired by the fairy tale where they would all get a key, and Raku would have the pendant, but only one of the keys would work. So you were wrong, Chris! So Chijuge was going to have the key that worked, but she decided to give it to Onodera because she knew that they loved each other and that Raku didn't love her back. So now the promise between six-year-olds is made, and they have to abide by decisions they made back then.
Because, yeah, that makes complete sense. Like, no, your feelings will never change. Hmm.
There are some funny moments that I do like through the course of this chapter. I like whenever Marika shows up because she's got some great reactions to things. Like when they confront him, they're like, which of us do you want to marry? And he's like, between the two of you, I guess it'd be Chijuge. And Mark just sobs on the floor. What? But there's also I like the inclusion of the detail, because way back when she first appeared, she said, I grew my hair out because you said you like, you know, girly girls with long hair, and Rocky mentions that here that you like Chijuge's long hair, although Onodera's got short hair in this, so... You hypocrite, Raku!
But he liked her personality, Nick. He was more interested in her six-year-old mind instead of her six-year-old body.
Chris's review of Nisekoi. He was more interested in her six-year-old mind than her six-year-old body.
Put that on the back of the next volume cover.
I also like the bit where Marika, you know, is when they're getting ready to go their separate ways, she's like, promise me if you don't marry Kazaki, you'll marry me instead! Promise! But, I mean, we've got the answers now, and apparently both girls have remembered this, which matches up with the warning from I think it was Chidige's mother, that she wasn't going to like what she found out. So the mystery, the big backstory thing has now been pretty much revealed. And so this is a big moment for the series. And I do like the way that it played out. Especially because it echoes some of the things that are going on right now in the story. With Chijuge wanting to get away from Raku and Onodera after she found out that Onodera was in love with Raku and so on and so forth. So... I did like the way that this played out, but we don't have to spend a whole lot of time talking about it.
Yeah, I think it was a fine chapter, but I'm pissed because if it's not going to be Itsugumi, Chitoge, man. Chitoge is my second
pick. It's not going to be Onodera. I feel strongly about this, and I've never been wrong. Every prediction I've ever made has come true. Remember Rebecca? She's never going to be an important character. Onodera is never going to be the one true girl.
Wait. If you...
Yeah, you know, I've never been one for Raku. I've never been one for Raku and Haruna. Sorry, Raku and Onodera.
If you make Chitoge and Raku your OTP for the series, maybe it'll actually come true. Since you have
I do have 100%.
Your flawless shipping record.
My shipping record. You know what? There comes a point in every man's life where he has to put his pride on the line. I will put my undefeated OTP streak on the line here. And I'm going to say Raku ends up with Chitoge. And this is going to start my undefeated streak. I'm going to be like the new Undertaker. Just with OTPs, except I retire after beating, like, the giant Gonzalez, and everyone's like, this wasn't a streak, this sucked.
So you'll be Rob Van Dam instead, like 4-0 at WrestleMania.
Exactly.
Wrestling! That's the best way to talk about shit. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I do like the way that this played out, though. Especially in terms of now they know the answer, but now we get to find out if that actually holds true in the present. So, okay. So, Toriko. Lots of stuff got skipped in Toriko, didn't it?
Interestingly to me, the character portraits for this chapter: Toriko, Komatsu, Joey, Acacia, and Coco.
Why Coco?
Yeah, that's what's curious to me. Like, it's not like Coco had a more significant role than any of the other four kings besides Toriko and Ness. Like, it's not like he did anything more than Zebra and Sunny did. They all just lied face down after presumably having an hour-long awesome battle with Joey.
My guess is that they're like, oh, we've got five spots. Who's going to be that fifth spot? We could do any of these characters. And Marlene was like, Coco, because she likes Coco.
Is that it? I was wondering if it was maybe like, because you know in HBO series, like when a new episode's starting, they do like the previously on, and most of it will bring up like old scenes before to like remind readers important or watchers important information they may have forgotten. And I wondered if they put Coco in there because it's like, hey, remember, you know, fucking spoilers, but, you know, Tommy Rod and Grimpatch just melt away from antibacterial, you know, weaknesses. But they have a bacteria user on their team, so maybe they're not dead. Keep in mind, Coco.
Maybe.
This chapter is titled Eating Each Other, which sounds way dirtier than it actually is. It's about people literally devouring and consuming each other. They make a note of, like, okay, you know, gourmet cell demons, they don't eat each other because they're pure appetites. They exist to consume other things, so if they try to consume each other, things go bad. In the worst case scenario, both would explode. Not kill each other, explode. Because they can't actually digest the cells because of their strength. This is why Center, the gourmet nucleus, is not on the plant's full course meal. So, but sometimes cells that are super strong can't take another gourmet cells, like when Neo devoured Don's slime. And so the Blue Nitro suddenly start picking up and talking with each other, and the one who is imitating Kaka is like, yeah, that happened with Jiro. He had a lot of, you know, gourmet cells in him, but it's because he ate a lot of Nitro. That's what he was so strong. But holy shit, that guy just tried to eat Neo. What the hell is he thinking? And for more than that, of course, Toriko just said, it's like, yeah, you're going to be in my full course meal. Fuck you. I'm going to eat you. And Acacia says, what are you even thinking? You're trying to insult me? And because, like, it's not an insult. It's the utmost sign of respect. And in a weird moment, suddenly Toriko's gourmet cell demons just pop out. The red one comes out to block an attack by Acacia, which is just him putting his hand forward, and it gets really big, and a handprint appears in the rock behind them, and the blue demon comes out and starts fighting with Acacia. Just punches him really hard. And we get more of those shots of, like, this is the planet. This is what happened when that guy attacked. You can see it. It's super powerful. They also Toriko's hair stops being blue because the blue demon popped out while he's fighting with Acacia. And then, rather cleverly, God notices them fighting because one of Acacia's attacks hits him. So he retaliates and just sticks his tongue out. This giant tongue hits Neo, who tries to start eating it, and then just hammers him into the ground over and over and over and over again. So strong that it goes all the way through the center of the core of the Earth and starts leaving impacts on the other side. I love that. And then there's just this hole left where Acacia was bashed into it, and he's like, oh! I'm gonna get you, God!
Oh, I shouldn't have punched Acacia. Or, God, that was a bad idea. I do love particularly that one shot when Acacia realizes God's attention just turned to him, because it's like the first time I think we've really ever seen him like terrified too. Like you see,
I'm gonna let you handle this, Neo.
Yeah, you see Neo like, what the, oh shit,
ow ow ow, food, ow ow. So the Blue Nitros come in to provide backup because Toriko fighting with Acacia is one thing. God fighting him, bit of another thing. So they say, okay, you know, we'll help out with the preparation. But then Toriko steps in again, having seemingly bonded with his gourmet soul demons again. And Toriko makes a note, and he says, I remember you guys. Hey, the two of us met once in Vegetable Sky, and, oh, you helped us in Area 7. I know it was part of your plan in order to get Pear from Bambina, but you did train us, so I'm thankful for that. And the Kaka, the imposter Kaka, says, you know, I too held on to a thread of hope in the appetite hidden within you, but my expectations were terribly off. You couldn't even sink your teeth into the Monkey King. I'm saying, this is no place for you to set foot into unarmed. And everyone's like, stop trying to talk to him, just kill him. But Toriko says, I'm not unarmed because I have the weapon of appetite! And then his gourmet cell demons pop out again. But then we cut away from them to where Tommy Rod and Grimpatch are fighting the chefs that Joey summoned. Starjun is also still there. And they're kicking ass pretty easily. They take out the chefs pretty quickly. And in a weird moment, Tommy Rod and Grimpatch are like, yay, we won!
That's my favorite part, because it's just so out of character, it seems.
And Grimpatch is like, I want poison now.
And then all of a sudden, they both start melting away! And I'm not sure if this is because Grin and Tommy Rod have been affected, or if it's because Coco's been knocked unconscious, which we see that Joey took out Sunny and Zebra and Coco seemingly very quickly, and just comments, and they were neglectful with their antibacterial preparation. They couldn't escape us with death. Sergeant's like, what, you already defeated them? And Joey says, well, no, we fought for around an hour in the back channel, so that's all. And they say, like, you know, you're really strong, but you don't have food luck, so you will die. I'll take care of you here and prepare God. And Starjun, suddenly a third eye boom, appears on his forehead, and he says, do you realize whose son I am? And Joey's like, no.
Coco?
Got black hair. It's a third eye.
Who is his father. His and Toriko's father.
Right.
It's God. They're frog children.
Oh, wow, that'd be a fucking twist.
Oh, they're Battletoads!
Oh, that'd be so tits.
We cut over to Komatsu's friend. I've never remembered this guy's name. And he says, I can see the path of energy that God is absorbing. I can see his appetite. It's here! He jumps onto it. Get it! Alright!
Don't know what to do from here.
Get with this tiny knife! And then he just reacts in shock to something. We don't see what it is as the chapter ends.
I think it's Komatsu.
Oh.
Matsu's
up against the wall.
So Komatsu's just like, I don't know, he's inside of Gon, and there's like, Gon's actually a camping monster, and he's like having tea. He's like, oh, fancy seeing you here.
They have a soda machine with 700 different flavors in it.
Let me let you in.
They still don't have my favorite, though, which is like caffeine free Diet Coke.
One day, I'm gonna find it. That's my dream, to search the entire gourmet world for diet caffeine-free Coke.
Oh, you can get it. Seriously, I overheard someone complaining about there not being caffeine-free Coke in a vending machine recently.
My sister used to go out of her way to get caffeine-free diet vanilla Coke, which they only sold in, like, one store in Pennsylvania or something like that.
I mean, I've got regular vanilla Coke right here, but...
Yeah, but this was diet caffeine-free version of it.
Well, let me tell you something, man. My favorite part of vanilla Coke is the vanilla flavoring and the corn syrup. And that's it.
I was like, you're not a big fan of the carbonation?
What do you... Like... Caffeine-free Diet Coke, just get Sprite.
But the thing is that my sister was legitimately one of those people. She liked Diet Coke as well, and she's like, I don't like cans Diet Coke, I like going to, like, a McDonald's to get Diet Coke, because she liked, like, the seltzer version of it better.
Get seltzer water.
There's a difference?
You know what? I wanted to say, like, it's the same thing, but legitimately there is a taste difference between Coke from a can and Coke from, like, a McDonald's or something like that. Because it is watered down.
They just use a syrup, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's it for the recap. It's always so weird whenever World Triggers off, because Toriko feels like the wrong series to end on.
Yeah, like we were missing something.
We can make up a World Trigger.
Okay. Let's
World
all do
my heart and back door part 5.
You didn't have time to write it. Well, I'll just have to write it on the spot. All right. Asama walks into the room, and Kitora is super naked. And he's like, let's bang. And she's like, ew, no, I will never bang you. And he starts crying.
The end.
Credits, yeah. That's it. Part 6 is where the story's really going to take off.
Yeah, that's going to do it for the recap portion of the Weekly Manga Recap. So it is now time to name our favorite series of the week and our weekly MVPs. I will start us off, I guess. My favorite chapter was Food Wars this week.
How close was it to Black Clover?
I think that would have been my third choice.
Oh. I'll take it.
Third out of 6 series.
Yes.
Out of 7, if you count Nisekoi.
I don't.
I mean, there weren't very many series this week, but honestly, my impressions were mostly positive across them. Even the ones that weren't positive, neutral. So, not a lot to choose from, but I don't have one that was just like, oh, this was the worst. So, anyway. Yeah, I chose Food Wars because this does feel like it lived up to the role it was supposed to fill in terms of Erina kind of begrudgingly accepting one of Soma's dishes and approving of it, and also the meaning attached to it. This is a really big thing for this plot arc in particular, her remembering what she loves about cooking so much. And I'm interested to see where this is going to go, because Azami this entire time has been confident that Erina will just return to him on her own, and this seems like very strong evidence against that she is going to you know, not just go with his way of doing things. So, is that going to change his plans? What is Arena going to do from this point on? I want to see more. So, yeah, that's it for me. My Hero Academia won the audience poll again. It's like two straight months of My Hero Academia winning that one. Mostly, definitely deservedly so, but it's just becoming a very regular thing. I think that from now on, if I don't note what the what won the audience poll, just assume it was My Hero Academia, you guys. You're like, Rick, My Hero Academia was off this week and you didn't say it. It still won. Like, I can sell.
Ollie, what was yours?
I'm going to go with Black Clover. Because I have to. It was a really good chapter. I was really close to picking My Hero Academia, but I got to give it to my baby this week. My second baby.
Chris.
I picked World Trigger, because even though there was no chapter this week, I know if there had been one, it would have been the best. Now I give it to My Hero Academia.
I was like, don't make me come over there.
I'm just like, Nick, what are you doing here? No, Nick, no! Boom, 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 boom.
It is properly. Can you, like, do, like, a little bit of strangling yourself and put your elbows off screen?
Oh, yeah, it's just me like,
there we go. Hollywood magic. Although I think that you were facing entirely the wrong way to do that.
Well, no, because this is where you are, right?
No.
Hold on. I'm about to open. No. We had it right. Yeah, like. Yeah, well, that was perfect. It looks great.
It must be Skype or some shit, because I don't know. All right. Anyway, okay. MVPs. Mine was Veto in Black Clover.
Wow.
Yeah!
Give the smackdown to Asta. he had a cool speech. A bunch of cool villain speeches this week, though. I think that I'm giving it to Veto because it surprised me the most. He's mostly, to this point, been going on and on about despair, and so him very nonchalantly talking about, like, these are your weaknesses, and this is why, you know, you're so prone to me defeating you, and while he's doing it, it's a really badass moment. Yubak had a cool speech. All for One had a cool speech, but Veto's takes it for me, because he talked the talk, and he walked the walk very effectively. And in an unexpected way, because Yuabox was expected, let's face it.
I pick All Might, because this may be one of the... Well, it's definitely the last time we'll see him fight, and it was such a good ending to that. And his whole, like, going back into the powered-up form, you know, because he's still that pillar and he's still on the job. Yeah, that really got to me. A couple tears were shed. But, yeah, he's my MVP for this week.
And I went with Osamu, of course, because he's just the best guy. No, I went with All Might as well.
Pull out a gun.
Nick, no! And then, like, you see a bullet go through my head, you're like, how did he do that one?
I'm sorry, I actually completely missed what you said.
All Might.
All Might again. It is a cool moment. I came close to him, but I don't know. Maybe I was feeling evil this week. I don't know. Went with the villain instead of the hero. It was a cool moment. I almost gave it to him instead. Alright, well, that's going to do it. So, guys, thank you for joining us, as ever. We tend to record the show on hitbox.tv/RoloT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change things up, so you can follow the official at WMR Podcast Twitter in order to stay updated on that stuff. Also, you can follow your hosts individually at RoloT, at Why Ruler of Time, and our special guest, Annalisa, can be found at Kaito Ace. That's KAITOU_Ace. Past episodes, you can find them on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, on iTunes, where you can subscribe to us, as well as leave a comment or a rating, and you can find them on YouTube. Weekly Manga Recap, one word, is the name of the account. We get anything on iTunes, Chris? Or
I didn't check the iTunes specific. Let me...
No, the woodworkers have gotten to him!
Yeah, I'm just so defeated, Nick. Like, what's the point?
What's the point?
Why bother? I'm just going to type it in, and I'm going to click it, and I'm going
to get back to 125.
Yeah, I'm going to be like, oh, hey, God, remember when we were in almost in the top 50? That was a great day, but, you know.
Whatever.
Nothing here. Yeah, I don't think there was anything new. It seems like the same. Yeah, no, nothing. I just got my hopes up.
You're going to change your name to ERT or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not too far off the truth. Eeyore would probably get at least one more match on Tinder than I did, though.
Be sure to send us criticism, ask us questions, make suggestions for future manga for us to read. Send those to our email, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. And special thanks, of course, go out to our Patreon supporters, because your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. We did the Q&A episode a couple of days ago, had a good time doing that, and there will be more in the near future.
Yes. Also, I want to give a special thank to our newest patron. I feel like you fuckers are coming up with more convoluted names for me to say. Kirill Shakabowski.
That's a pretty cool name.
It's a very cool name. I have no idea if I was even close to pronouncing it, though.
And, of course, special thanks to Infamous Planet and to Steve Man. Steve Man is our title artist. You can check out his work in many different places. Rockfanboy.deviantart.com, iDriveBoobs.tumblr.com, patreon.com/SteveMan. Many, many more places, too. And that's going to do it.
That is it. Yeah. What do we wrap up with?
I don't know.
Well, we can all pick our new favorite Pokemon out of the three new Pokemon that were revealed yesterday.
Oh, I like the mongoose one with the sharp teeth.
Good. Nobody else wanted that one. I want the bug. Give me the bug.
Where is the story? I need to make my pick.
Well, here, I'll link you. Oh, no, I can't link it to you. It'll destroy the Skype channel. Here, I'll link it in the chat, Nick. You just click it from the chat. If you go to Serebii, you can see him there. You can see everything on Serebii. They know all the Pokemon details.
Is there a freaking...
Yeah, just keep scrolling down. Picture? Yeah, you'll see a picture of three of them.
Oh, God, there's so many stories. Where
are
you?
Just gotta go down to Tuesday.
Okay, so there's the HM slaves. Oh, it's cute. It's pretty cute. This weird dog squirrel thing.
Yeah, look at those big teeth. It's like, and that hair
thing.
I'm
so happy to see you.
It looks like angry happy. I love it.
Is that a koala with a log drum?
Yes. Oh, and a little time. I forgot the new dog also got revealed very, very, very recently. And he's a rock type. I'm gonna get one and call it Scotia. And then I'm going to be sad every time it gets knocked out.
Are those the legendaries? The metal things? They look anime as fuck.
Where? The lion and the bat?
The giant red metal.
Oh, no. One of them's a legendary for this game, but not one of the like, mascot legendaries. The other one's an old legendary from X and Y that's just getting released now.
Oh, okay.
There was something confusing that Pokemon did in X and Y, where it had three legendaries that were in the game, but they didn't give it to you until, like, 2 years after the game had been released.
Yeah.
And longer, in the case of this most recent guy, who's only just now being released.
In time for the next generation.
It's very strange. I'm like, why did you put him in the last game, then?
I'm like, oh, yeah, that Pokemon,
I do like that dog, and it takes a lot for me to like a dog, and it's a cute-looking one, and I can just mute the game, so, you know, that takes care of my problems with dogs.
But what if he has, like, the cutest... Like, what if he comes out and he's like...
I'd be like, no.
What if he's like, Nicholas, Nick.
He can talk!
No, my name's Nickmon!
You're not a Digimon! You're lying!
Oh, I loved you, Nick. Nick, Nickmon.
And on that note...